Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
We certainly appreciate.
And gentlemen, welcome to the Ralph Pointer What's Happening broadcast. This is a beautiful Tuesday. I hope you enjoyed your day. And now we expect to start tonight with some rousing conversation with our host, Ralph Pointer. Mr. Pointer, how are you today?
Well, I am fine. And as much as I love Bob Marley, I still lean to Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. And there's a great, great, great mobilization story behind that. A great.
Absolutely. I know you prefer Nina Simone. I just had to find her on the list quickly. And I thought we'd just talk about love, because love is why we're all here. We have real love for our fellow man. We want everybody to be uplifted, not just feel uplifted. We want to uplift everybody. And you've got two guests. You've got 4503 and 2869. And I'm sure more are coming on board. But I just want to let you know that you have those two who are already on board.
Yes, well, I'd like to open the program with, you know, you want to talk about love. Let us talk about the slogan, Black Lives Matter. And what does that really mean when people say that? And it seems to have caught on. But I remember many years ago, and I'm talking about back in the early 60s, when I met Queen Mother Moore, and she tore up one of my petitions and said, language is very important, and you have to get it right. The meanings have to mean what you want them to. And I think we missed the boat with Black Lives Matter by not continuing the statement, Black Lives Matter, to who or to whom, whichever is correct. And then when you ask that question, you have to ask the next question, to who do black lives not matter and why? And when you come up with those answers, then you have something to discuss. And so I would like people to come in on that issue. Do black lives matter? To whom do they matter? To whom do they not matter? And what are the ramifications of that short statement? Now, I know people have called me and said they have other issues they'd like to talk about, so dial one of them in, and we will try to cover their issue or their fact along with this, do black lives matter? All right? Mary? 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 Hello?
Hello, Mr. Pointer. I turned my speaker off because the children were getting a little rowdy. They should be in bed. But I will go ahead and admit your guest now if you're ready.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, wonderful. 4503, you're on the air. 2869, you're on the air. 0895, you're on the air. And if you're on
Hello?
A cell phone, hi. If you're on a cell phone, I want you to know that you can just hit mute if you need to quiet your background noise right ahead. I'm going to mute my phone right now, and all of you are open for a panel discussion.
We
is
are.
That okay?
Well, this is Lynn Stewart. I'm 0895.
How you
and
doing, Lynn?
Good, good. And how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and so many people from the North Country have asked about you. Ryan Barron at the tax form, tax office, and Harold Stutter. And so they want to know how you're doing. And I says, she is still Lynn emotionally and politically and personally. We're trying to get her body to catch up. So will you give us some of your political thoughts this evening?
Okay, well, I think your question is not rhetorical. It is a true question, do black lives matter? And, of course, in today's New York Times was reported the latest Justice Department investigation of a major police department in which they found out that the Philadelphia Police Department, no surprise there, has been killing black men on an average of one a week for the last 8 years.
Wow.
And the press conference held thereafter, attended by the police commissioner, a black man, and the mayor, of course, a black man, and the man from the Justice Department, Ronald L. Davis, all of them said, but it was just as often black officers shooting black men as it was white officers, as if this somehow made it okay. And it reinforces, Ralph, one of the points you always make, that the army of occupation is the army of occupation. And when black people put on that uniform and they assume all of the evils that the white army of occupation has always assumed, they are no better than the Klan or anybody else. It isn't an issue any longer. It's an issue of that army of occupation wreaking its will with no checks, with no punishment, with no accountability whatsoever. And to say that this city of Philadelphia, with its long-time history of violence, of police corruption, terrible police corruption, is something that we should just ignore and say, well, it's a black cop shooting a black man, therefore it doesn't matter. I think that all black deaths should matter. and should be inquired into, because they are fraught with the issues of, was this done legally? Was this done within the scope of their employment? Is this done because they have become part of the blue line, and they are now, they have the same privilege, and I call that privilege the because I can privilege, that they do these things because they can, and they can get away with them. And
yes.
I said to you in a sort of a, when I, we were talking about this earlier, I said in sort of a joke way that if they wanted to show good faith, that they are really want to be in tune with the black community of Philadelphia, there is one very simple way to do it. They can free the Move 9, the Move who were bombed in their own house and had children killed, and they can free Mumia Abu-Jamal, who was totally innocent and is being kept in jail because of the strength of that police benevolent association in Philadelphia. So we know that this is just another, may I use the word, whitewash, and that none, once again, nothing will change. One every week, if that's acceptable, we can live with that. That's what they say. Okay?
Well,
the question is, can we live with that?
Well, you have opened up a lot of thought, and I don't want it to pass that when they suggest that a black officer killing a black man is less outrageous, that tells you several things. That tells you about the psychosis of the black community. It's a psychosis of the black officer. And what does that mean? And we'd have to delve into Franz Fanon and some of his statements as to what has happened to black people in America psychologically. And that fits right into what we're talking about tonight, to Black Lives Matter and to whom, and if they do not matter, to whom do they not matter, and what can we do about it? And you have just made two fantastic suggestions. If, I use the word again, if they intend to show any kind of good faith in the black community or by the black community, we should expect to see the Move family who was bombed and killed. We should expect to see them freed from this system tomorrow morning to say that we have some reason for dialogue, that they do hear us and they do recognize the evil, that the terror they have spread, they have put upon the black community all of these years. And so now we have several subjects to go over. And one of the other issues that you noticed in the New York Times was what is happening with Iran and their militias. I would like to have that as a program separately. Iran, the militias in Iran, the militias
in Iraq. The militias are Iraq militias.
Exactly. Masada al-Sadr. I'll never forget the picture of 10,000 guys walking in the street with AK-47.
Well, you may do that, but the people of Iraq feel that they are as dangerous as ISIS.
Well, that's what the New York Times reports, and
right.
That's why.
No, that was what Amy Goodman reported, I must admit. That's
well,
Amy.
Now you've raised several issues that I don't think we're going to be able to handle this evening.
No, I can't.
I would certainly like to go back to the whole question of Iran and when the Iranian government was democratically elected and the United States came in. And
well, if we had a week instead of 1 hour, we might be able to cover all your subjects, Ralph. But I
yes.
think your question that you posed is the issue of the hour. The question, do black lives matter, and to whom do they matter, and should they matter? So I think that if you can stick with that, that's good. You sound like a school teacher tonight.
Okay, thank you, Lynn Stewart, with the hooks, because I say all of the time, don't get me started. You got me started, Lynn.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Let's go to the next guest. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Anyone here?
Yes, we're here. Identify yourselves.
Dorothy Mackey.
Oh, do you have me?
Okay, Dorothy.
You have me online?
Who are you, Dorothy? Next. Dorothy.
Dick Minerly here.
Dick Minerly, would you give yourself a brief introduction? And as Lynn Stewart gave me the hook, be aware that we're going to give you a hook. We're looking at a 3-minute, you know, like a cover here.
Got it.
Go ahead.
Got it. I have a 5 degrees, 3 advanced degrees. I was an Air Force officer and commander, left honorably because of corruption that I witnessed and brutality across a system that was pretty much lawless. I have worked for FEMA and Homeland Security, Y2K management, and have witnessed the brutality of veterans throughout the VA system, as well as the predominance of the pharmaceutical industry that has done nothing but drugged a great many people into confusion and their own problems through the drugging industry. So, sadly, I've attempted to stand up against corruption in all areas, and as numerous of us have and all we have seen and gotten was absolute retaliation. That included for myself not only the destruction of my marriage, but when I met and was moving forward to marry a good and decent man, he was murdered, and I was told to watch my step or they would find a way to put me in prison. Thank you for listening.
Well, what you have just stated there, that we have to one day talk about whose lives really matter in this society, starting with the 1%, corporations, rich white men, et cetera, down the line, to see whose lives matter and whose lives do not matter. Well, go on to the next caller, Dick.
Hello. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes,
hello.
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is just making my point. It's nice to hear Lynn talking like she has always talked, as long as I can remember. And and you too, Ralph. I don't see it in terms of white and black. I see it in terms of impoverished and wealthy. And this is the basic division, and it cuts through class and race lines. So I would say that to the very wealthy, no lives of people in poverty matter, no matter what the person's race is, and that's the problem. And that until we address that particular problem, that's the cause. The cause is that there is a great distinction between, as you say, the 1% in the world and all the rest, but especially with those who are impoverished, because we must remember that poverty is slavery, and it doesn't just happen. Someone is doing it, and the people who are doing it are the very wealthy who need the slaves so that they don't have to do the dirty work of society in their process of accumulating wealth for themselves. So to me, I always see the villains as the very wealthy individuals and corporations, and I see the oppressed as all the impoverished people and a lot of the people in the middle, who get squeezed between the two forces, the force to be like the very rich and the force to have to live like the very poor too often. I mean, it is a terrible situation, and until we address the real problem that people and corporations, individuals and corporations, must not be allowed to accumulate excess wealth, we will never solve the underlying problem of poverty for all and the lives that don't matter, the millions, the billions of lives that don't matter to that small percentage that own everything because we have let them own everything. That's the real crime here. We have let them own it all. We allow the laws that allow them to be rich and nobody else to be rich or to challenge their position on any matter. Like you were talking last week about, what was it, in Michigan? And
yes.
The power of Whirlpool against the workers and everything else. I mean,
yes.
This, you know, you were there, Ralph. I didn't see it. I didn't go up there. But you were there. You saw the situation. And believe me, this is just another example of the power of money to impoverish people, which is just another way of saying enslaving people. It was the same thing in the years of slavery, when slavery was legal. That was the situation. The poor people were slaves, only we've had a name for it then. Now we don't use that name, but that is the name whenever we speak of people who are deliberately impoverished so that others can benefit.
Yes, well stated. But I one of the things that we have discussed over the years is what came first, racism or classism? What is the predominant problem in America, racism or classism? And I remember once being in Cuba, talking, you know, in a meeting with politically active Cubans, and I was asking about the question of race and poverty and sexism, and the answer I got was sexism is, what's the Spanish word for large? Let me help here. Spanish word for large. Grande. Sexism is grande, grande, and racism is petito. And I'm saying, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now I would apply that, you know, analysis to America and say classism is not so petito. Racism is grande, and all you have to do is look at that number of black people killed in Philadelphia over 10 years and multiply that by the rest of America. And I get a little nervous when somebody says, well, during slavery, white people were slaves. That could be the issue of another program. Not white
people. Yeah, In Africa, there is no race distinction between the rich and the poor, but there is still much slavery, and many lives don't matter in African nations also. So that's all the point I'm making is that classism. Yeah,
we're being very specific.
Yeah,
we can also look at the rest of the world and say, how many white people are dying of starvation as compared to the number of black people dying of starvation? We have to recognize that one of the things that I've said for the last, I don't know, 60 years, that racism is a question of insanity. And if you go to any psychologist or psychiatrist, they will give you a definition of insanity is the inability to perceive reality is a definition of insanity. And then we come to, we're talking about basically America, and we see racism is an insanity that goes beyond any sense or explanation. Insanity is a word all of its own. And so if we look at the numbers, we see a problem there. If we look at the whole question of do black officers kill people of color, that's another insanity of black people. And I say we would have to get into Franz Fanon with some very wonderful descriptions he gives of this phenomenon. But I think it's something for people who never heard of Franz Fanon, or for people who never studied world politics, for people who have never talked about Marxism and Leninism, but for people to understand this basic issue, do black lives matter? Do any lives matter? To who or what can we do about the situation? And I would like to suggest to you that the figures of lynching, and I think Apdaker's book on the Negro in America, his two books, and this history of racism is something that is so horrific that not only is it not taught historically in our schools, it is so horrific that black people don't want to talk about it. Let's say I'm getting the hook again, so I'm going to let someone else come in. I'm going to let someone else come in on that issue. Anybody would like to explore this problem? We having trouble with that switchboard, Mary? Oops, I believe Mary has left us again.
I take mine off a speakerphone, Mr. Porter. So when I hear you call my name, it takes about 1 minute for me to get back on open air. But all your lines are open, and I just want to say good evening to all the guests. Welcome to Human Rights Demand. We very proudly present Ralph Porter, What's Happening, every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. The number for people who are listening by computer and might want to also call in and join this panel is 347-857-3293. We ask that if you do call in and join the panel, that you keep your background noises low. Well, actually, just eliminate them if you can. And that's why I took my phone off the air. And you can simply use your cell phone if you need to. And so all of your lines are open, Mr. Pointer. You have callers at 862-796-3085-2869-4503. You have callers on all of those lines. And so you could just ask for the next person. Or if you have a specific person, you can just ask that person. But everybody's line is open, and somebody's on the phone right now, it sounds like. So when you're going to take another call or what have you, you can just mute your phone and come off of live air here. And so we thank you for joining us tonight for Ralph Porter, What's Happening. We love having all of you as questions. Great
question.
So I'll just leave you to
see if
call on the next person, Mr.
Porter. Mary.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. 963. Would you open that, please?
All the lines are open, sir. I talked to Ms. Betty Davis today, your esteemed colleague, and she told me that
you're
tonight. And so all the lines are open, and I'll only mute someone if I hear background noise.
Please open, because I'm getting calls.
Hello?
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 Yes, hello.
Hello, Ralph here. Identify yourself. Ralph here.
Hello?
Ralph here, please identify yourself.
Hello?
I hear you.
Oh, well, hi,
this is Larry calling. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I hope you have heard the beginning of the program. Will you chime in? I know you have something important to say.
Well, my brother, first and foremost, the only thing that I really want to say is, first and foremost, thank you and Lynn and Betty Davis and Mary and everyone who's making this show a reality. Now, let me just say this, that I think that, you know, and I've been listening now for about a half an hour to the program, so I didn't just come on. But I want to say that I think that what your point, the points that you have made are very, very important. Can you hear me, brother?
I can hear every word. I hear a lot of
okay.
stuff.
Okay. Okay, I'm hearing stuff in the background. But anyway, the bottom line is that I think that what all of us need to understand is that not only do all lives matter, but in the United States, and all lives, of course, do matter, but in the United States and elsewhere, but here in this country, we need to understand that this country was predicated on genocide. Let's stop playing games. Let's understand this, okay? It's a genocide of the indigenous native peoples. It's the genocide, slavery and genocide of millions upon millions. And I'm talking about 250 million to 300 million blacks who were actually just murdered brutally in this so-called slave trade. What a name, trade. Think about that word, trade. How do you trade human beings? So I want to say, as a spokesperson and representative for Reverend Edward Pinckney, who is imprisoned, and you know Reverend Pinckney well, as do I, Ralph, that Reverend Pinckney has been standing up in the state of Michigan in Benton Harbor against these avaricious, blood-sucking corporations, all right? And specifically, Whirlpool Corporation. And Whirlpool Corporation is only one of many corporations that are, in fact, taking the land from the people, housing from the people, bread from the people, money from the people. I'm talking about everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. All right? So we understand that while class is definitely involved, so is color. I don't use the word race. I use the word color because I see one race, and that's the human race. But unfortunately, we have these insidious, insipid devils, if you will, in quotation marks, metaphorically speaking, who have tried to divide the human race and say, well, this is that race or that. No, it's one race, but it's different color. And color has been used and is still being used as a way to divide and conquer and keep us in fear of each other and to actually manipulate and control each other. And that also, we need to understand, you mentioned Frantz Fanon, the incredible man who wrote a number of books, including the book Wretched of the Earth and also the book Black Skin, White Mask, etc., etc. The point is that we need to understand that the only way to eradicate, to get rid of classism, racism, or so-called racism, I call it colorism, is to be honest. And honesty means we have to understand what this country, the United States of America, was built upon and is predicated upon. Of course this is a struggle of black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, all oppressed people. But that does not mean that we can ignore the reality of quote-unquote racism. So Reverend Edward Pinckney, and I'm slipping back to the very, very quickly, Reverend Edward Pinckney, who has been fighting the corporate blood-sucking, avaricious corporation of Whirlpool, which is headquartered in Benton Harbor, Michigan, or as I call it, Benton Harbor, Mississippi, is one of many who are fighting tooth and nail on behalf of all the people. Unfortunately, however, the people who are the most impacted, I'm not saying the only impacted, I said the most impacted, tend to be and are, in fact, quote-unquote, people of color, and especially black, brown, and red people. Now, that is not to say that white folks are not impacted, because they are. They are definitely impacted. But in order to bring about systemic change, we have to look at the basis of what this country is built upon. That's the only way we're going to change it. And so we have to deal with this in honest terms. We can't hide behind and say, oh, it's just class. It's not just class. It's fundamentally color. And of course, class is a part of it and a significant part of it, okay? But let's understand that we have these Negroidians, or at least that's what I call them, as an example, like Barack Obama and Holder and Susan Rice and Condoleezza Rice. And see, it doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans, because it's big. It's one big plantation. And Reverend Edward Pinckney understands that. It's why he has been in prison and why he is viewed as such a threat. But what's important is all of us understand that. So I just want to, again, compliment you, my brother Ralph, and you know, Sister Lynn Stewart and Betty Davis, you know, and Mary, and I want to thank you. I just want to say, let's keep on being real. Let's keep it real. When I was writing for the Black Commentator, I had a column called Keeping It Real. So let's just keep it real. Ain't nothing wrong with keeping it real. As a matter of fact, everything is right. It's correct. It's necessary about keeping it real. So, my brother, thank you so very, very much. I want everyone to please remember that Reverend Edward Pinckney is among those who are political prisoners in this country, and we have many political prisoners. And we need to understand that America is not, I repeat, it's not the land of the free, the home of the brave, and all that nonsense. We don't have democracy. We know that. Why do we keep playing this game? We do not have democracy. We have hypocrisy, plutocracy, and corporatocracy in this country. And until we change that, beginning from the standpoint of the color analysis that I've just tried to present in some kind of hopefully succinct fashion, until we change that, this will continue. So we've got to deal with it in honesty and in real terms, real terms. You know, as Brother Franz Fanon said, you know, the reality is, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, that, you know, people, every generation has a responsibility. They will either take on this responsibility or they will shirk it. All right? And I'm paraphrasing. Those are not his exact words. I'm using my own words. We, all people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, on this responsibility, and not shirk it, but to change this entire despicable, hypocritical system of hypocrisy, because we do not have democracy. And I'm going to just say, like I always say, La Sima Tushin de Mbilisaka, we shall. We will succeed, without a doubt. And my brother and all my sisters, thank you so very, very much.
Well, thank you so much. I hope we're all taking this in, because you have said so much. And I think the word it is that Franz Fanon used was they will accept the challenge or betray it.
That's right.
Yes, but one of the things that you had said, I think, that is very important when we talk about the slave trade, and I happen to mention Cuba about sexism and racism, the difference, and they notice the difference. The role that Cuba has played against the colonial forces in Europe that organized the world according to color, and the thing that makes Fidel so dangerous is he has tried to undo that Gordian knot of color and race that they have used to organize the world, to untie it.
for the benefit of all of the people of the mm-hmm. world. And he's not hated because he's a communist, and I hear people talk about, oh, he's a communist, and I'm saying, pay attention. We have the largest trading partner of America is a communist nation, and they call it China.
Right.
They have no problem with that. And so, yes, we have to begin to analyze everything that we've been taught throughout the years. And I'm so glad that you come in and give us a perspective, and I jump with, and I borrow from everyone. And I like to borrow from Lynn Stewart a moment. And one of the things she said is the problem with America is that it is hooked like a junkie on heroin on cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
Cheap labor. Mm-hmm. I says, very well said, Lynn. And now we get a perspective hooked on cheap labor, and the cheap labor for people of color. And one of the things that I was able to project while in California, the new racism, because as much as I respect the erudite scholarship of Michelle Alexander, the new racism, the new Jim Crow. No, it's not the new Jim Crow. It's the same Jim Crow that it always
Thank
was.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you. That's right. Go ahead, bro.
Expressed in different ways. And being in California, I says the new slavery are the brown people, the Mexicans who come here. And why are these right-wing Congress people, or why are all of these Congress people so worried about citizenship? They don't give a damn about citizenship. What they give a damn about people's ability to fight the oppression. And so they're coming across the borders. But I haven't heard, maybe you can tell me, of just one Mexican bomber. Those guys who are carrying a gun, and I'd like to talk about that in a subsequent program. We'll break it up and talk about Mexicans with guns and what does that mean, Colombians with guns, and what does that mean. It doesn't mean what major media has been telling us. And
that's right. And Brother Ralph, know, I got to interject and say this, I'm sort of chuckling, not because it's funny, but because it's kind of ironic. You said Mexicans with guns, right? And you and I both remember Robert Williams, who wrote a book called Negroes with Guns, right? And what that really means is anybody who dares, especially a person of color, but even a white folk, whether it's John Brown or John Brown's sons, who stand up and say, wait a minute, we're not going to accept the status quo. And it happens to be that one of my heroes, as far as Mexico is concerned, happens to be Zapata and Pancho Villa. Zapata and Pancho Villa. And the fact of the matter is that moving to Cuba, to the Cuban people, Africa owes and the African diaspora owes a huge, huge how can I put this diplomatically? Debt of to the small nation of Cuba, because had it not been for the revolutionary brothers and sisters from Cuba who gave their lives in the struggle with respect to Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, it's South Africa, it goes on and on, but the point is had it not been for our brothers and sisters who gave their lives to fight against a U.S.-backed, again, I want to emphasize that, U.S.-backed apartheid state of South Africa, who knows? There would be no Angola. There would be no Mozambique. There would be no Guinea-Bissau. There would be no South Africa, albeit South Africa and all of these countries have major problems thanks to Barack Obama's AFRICOM, and before him, G.W. Bush's AFRICOM, okay, that are dividing and manipulating the people on the African continent to get them to kill one another for the interests of the corporate elite in this country.
Wow.
So I just wanted to say that real quick. I'm sorry to be belaboring this, brother, but I will shut up. I want to thank you so much. You, Sister Betty Davis, Sister Lynn Stewart, Sister Mary, thank all of you all. We got to keep putting it out. We got to make these links so we understand that we're all in this struggle together.
Okay. Dear Brother Larry, but I'm going to make a change right now. I'm going to stop saying, don't get me started, and start saying, don't get Larry started. These are some of the people that understand that Nelson Mandela would have still been in jail.
That's right.
He had Cubans. One in every four families had somebody who served in Africa. And
that's right.
Think of those numbers and the Cuban revolution for the world. And so, but I would like to go back to one of the things that we started to talk about a little earlier is this phony war on drugs. And I remember early on, before it became big in America, there was a war, but maybe at the same time, a war on drugs in South America, basically Colombia, and they were forming all of these organizations, armies training people to destroy and control South America, College of the Americas, torture, weapons, etc., to go conquer and enslave our brothers in South and Central America. But I remember early on talking to a banker, somebody who was big in Franklin Bank before they went under for gross corruption. But I won't get into that. Anyway, he said, don't you understand it's about money? And I'm saying, well, what do you mean, money? And he says, because Colombia has so much money, they are able to loan other South and Central American governments money. And that takes the Americans out of it, because they're supposed to be the ones on money. And so what do? They attack, these countries, the Colombians, etc., based on the myth of a war on drugs, just like the war on drugs here in America, and that's another program we're going to have to talk about. But bringing it up to today, I wonder what the Americans are going to do now that the Chinese have headed up a group to have their own. We're going to bypass the IMF. We don't need those people. We're going to do it ourselves. We're going to do it better. And I said, let's see the American reaction there. They're going to talk about the war on drugs. And if they talk about the war on drugs, it would be the Chinese having a war against the Americans, or the Europeans, the British, for forcing the Chinese to have drugs, the opium wars, et cetera. But I'm going to back off a little bit here and let somebody else come in and give us a perspective.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Brother Ralph, and I want to thank everyone again. Remember Reverend Edward Chinkney, one of our political prisoners, one of our many political prisoners in the U.S. And by the way, let us also remember that the United States government, under the guidance, if you will, of the nominally black Barack Obama, is now trying to destabilize the government once again. Does anybody remember Hugo Chavez? Okay. And they're once again going back to this country,
trying to destabilize it. But let me just say thank you. Thank you. We will not let that happen. The war on drugs is nothing more than a war of the rich against the poor. It is a war on everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. I love you. Love you all. I'm going to sign off. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, Larry. We got Larry started. Larry, can you do 6160? Mary? 6160?
Hello, this is Betty. I think I'm on already. I just want to interject here that the UN has it launched a justice initiative. The U.S. Justice Department will be accused in front of the United Nations on Thursday of failing to account for hundreds of African Americans who disappeared or were murdered by groups such as the Ku Klux Klan during the civil rights era. The UN Human Rights Council in Geneva will be told at a special meeting of its working group that the wave of racial violence that swept through the Deep South in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s has never been accounted for. And they're now requiring and instructing the FBI to look again at the issue. The point I really want to make is that these inquiries have been heightened. The issue has been heightened by the growing public concern about contemporary police shootings of unarmed black people such as Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner in New York. 2008, Congress allegedly passed this Emmett Till unresolved civil rights crime act, which we know was supposed to kickstart the investigation of murders, but petered out because the Department of Justice and the FBI has done nothing. And you should realize that there is a man in blackface by the name of Eric Holder who was in charge of the Justice Department while nothing was done. According to the Syracuse team that has been spearheaded this investigation, the FBI has seen many investigations to be at an end even before agents have interviewed all of the new potential witnesses or talked or even talked to all the victims' family members. So when you ask what does it mean to say Black Lives Matter, I want to go back again to a state that I learned from Ralph and Lynn. You don't have any rights that you're not willing to defend. You don't have any rights that you are afraid to exercise. And if you don't have rights, and if you're afraid to exercise your rights to defend your right to have a right, then your life doesn't matter. And this is the agenda that we are looking at in America. And I told you the story a couple of weeks ago of a young lady when I said to her, "You're not concerned about the fact that the police are approaching a homeless black man in the street, and he's done nothing. You don't even want to be an eyewitness. You don't want to just stand there and make it clear that the world is watching." And her response to me was, "No, I don't care." And I said, "Well, that's how and why your generation is being pushed back into the new slavery." And she said, "I don't care about the new slavery." One of the things I am noticing is I pass out the notices to tell people, no shopping this Easter. Keep your pennies in your pocket because the Easter suit you buy will be the Easter suit you bury him in as a result of the police death squads killing our young people. One of the things they are doing, they are taking the flyers. But I notice their young children, when I'm explaining to their parents why they should take the flyers or they should join the Easter boycott and the shopping boycott except for what you absolutely need, the children are sad and they are scared. When I asked the one little 12-year-old boy, "Do you understand what I'm saying to your mother?" he said, "Yes, they're killing us." So my message to all of the adults, even if you don't think your lives matter, how can you accuse our children of inappropriate behavior when you have not shown them how to stand up for their human rights, when you are not modeling for them their right to be treated as human beings? So even if you don't care about this generation, The Cree Nation, that's C-R-E-E, a nation of Native Americans who were here long before we got here, said you should consider every act that you are doing or not doing in terms of how it will affect the seventh generation. And I would like to leave you with that bit of information. There are all kinds of horrendous statistics, and it's one thing for a group of concerned citizens to have the integrity to go before a national and international court and say what America is doing to people of color in the United States is wrong. But unless we have action in the street, unless we take action on our own behalf, we will not see a change. The definition of insanity that Mr. Poynter gave is a very important one. And we all need to look at ourselves. The least we can do is to stop shopping. 41 cents of every dollar in this country comes from black people shopping in a capitalist enterprise. What if you withheld at least 31 cents? Use the other 10 cents for the absolute necessity, but you kept those 31 pennies in your pocket. You could cripple this economy. They count on your money. Thank you, Mr. Poynter. That was all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to get about 10 hooks there because I think we started the program with a three-minute limit. And so I think we're getting past that. But I would like to add to what you had said, Betty. Join the boycott because the suit you may buy may be the suit you bury your children in. But join us to become a part of the group that solves this problem. And so, you know, give it both ends, the positive as well as the negative. And
Brother Ralph, could I interject here?
Please. Please.
As we know, as bad as it is, the shootings that are occurring in the streets, our prisons are not prisons. They are death camps. And I really would like to have Sister Mary give us any latest quick update on what's happening to our brothers and sisters that are in the death camp, if she still is able to get on her mic.
Yes, ma'am, I am able, and I thank you very much for the offer. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And yes, indeed, we have many individuals. As a matter of fact, 1.25 million of the people who are incarcerated at this moment are mentally ill people. And they didn't get mentally ill after they were locked up. For the most part, most of them are locked up because they are mentally ill and they may have been displaying inappropriate behavior out of their denial of psychiatric treatment. Now, I would like for everybody to please go online tonight and sign a petition. It's not a petition to any officials because these officials really don't care, most of them, about what we say about the prison industrial complex. It's a cash cow. They're rich and getting richer by the moment by enslaving people in prison. Even our most vulnerable citizens can be killed in front of our eyes in prison, and none of the guards are even fired, much less prosecuted. Yes, you saw Darren Rainey get dragged into a shower in Florida on video, and you know that he screamed for his life for 45 minutes as he was boiled to death. You know that they took a young man who had completed his military service there in Harlem, and they took him to Rikers Island and baked him to death. In DeKalb County, Georgia, where I live, another military serviceman, a veteran, was running naked, and a police officer, a white officer, shot him to death. He was no threat to anybody. Excuse me. So the truth is that as service people go overseas and to battlefield and come back with various level of PTSD, police officers are just picking them off. And then we have a great many people who've never been in military service, but they have various mental illnesses, including autism, including schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. And we know that many of these illnesses are completely manageable if the person was getting treatment. Bipolar disorder, for instance, Congressman Kennedy worked as a congressman of the United States, and he's bipolar. So, excuse me, these do not have to be crippling diseases. They're being denied treatment in order to keep them for prison profits. That's what it's all about, the prison profits. And so the petition that I would appreciate your signing is a petition for you to send to your friends, to your groups, to your online groups. It's not a petition that's for any officials unless they just want to join in, and I hope some of them do. It's a petition that's on petition site.com. That's CareToosPetitionSite.com, and it's called AIMI, A-I-M-I, versus USA. That's Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill versus USA. We are getting ready to have a class action suit against the United States of America on behalf of mentally ill people who have been abused, neglected, and killed. So if you know of any mentally ill people or any families of mentally ill people who are warehoused in prisons and jails, who are being abused, neglected, or who have been killed under the color of law, they need to join this lawsuit. And it's AIMI versus USA. You spell AIMI, A-I-M-I, and that's the acronym for Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And this is only a petition for awareness. We're taking up to 200 cases before the United Nations International Court this year, up to 200 cases. And these cases include the victims of mentally ill people. Sometimes, not often at all, like they want to pretend, but sometimes mentally ill people have been responsible for some horrendous acts because they were denied treatment. They've even killed people because they were denied treatment. And so those people who were allowed to be killed in order to be able to incarcerate that mentally ill person for life, that person who was killed because the individual was allowed to be untreated, was in fact forced to be untreated because they denied treatment, that person also deserves payment. And so we're only suing for money for the affected parties, the mentally ill people or their survivors if they were killed, and also their victims, people who have been raped, burglarized, or killed by mentally ill people who were denied treatment. So that's AIMI, A-I-M-I versus USA. Thank you so much, Ms. Davis.
Well, thank you so much, Mary. We've come to another end of another wonderful program. I have been educated by it, and I hope that we will be able to come up with solutions to our problems. And I know next week's show, because people are calling me while this show is on, trying to get on some very wonderful people. You will hear from them next week. And I say one more time, thanks again for being here, and see you next week. Much love. Good
everybody,
night.
The call-in number for this show is 347-857-3293. Just go ahead and put it in your phone so that you will be able to call it next week on Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will appreciate your questions and comments, and we will get to everybody next week, hopefully that we did not get to this week. This has been the Ralph Porter What's Happening Show. Thank you very much for coming.
Say all the things that I should say, say them loud. tell clear how the whole round world is. I wish I could share all the love.